Welcome to another thrilling episode of Unfinished Business, the podcast that, well, kind of loosely talks about making a living on the web and in creative services with me. I am your host, Andy Clark, and with me today is...
Oh, Richard Rutter here. Nice to see you again, Andy.
And you, always, always a pleasure. Oh. You had a good week?
Very good week, thanks. Very busy. We were up at the Zero Heights Design System Awards earlier in the week to not win for Patterns Day, but there we are. We were trumped by a virtual conference instead, but we had a good time. Zero Height were fantastic hosts, so thank you to them. This is not a plug for Zero Height. It's just a genuine thank you for a nice time.
Can't win everything.
Not everything.
I mean, what have you won this year apart from the Oscar, Golden Globe? You haven't won the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize.
Apparently I'm in line for that next year. I just need to be a bit more fascist.
Oh, and presumably know a tiny bit about football?
Oh, I know enough about football. I probably know too much about football to win that award.
Yeah. We had a shocking, well, not really shocking, but we had a poor result this week, Wrexham. We lost against Hull City 2-0. But I've got to keep reminding myself that, you know, only a few years ago, Wrexham were like a non-league, national league team. And here we are playing against Ipswich Town and Coventry and Norwich and, you know, Hull City. And we've done really well. It's kind of like an unbeaten run of 9 games, 5 wins, 4 draws. Mid-table championship for the first time is not a bad place to be.
Oh, not at all. On my wife Wendy's side of the family, they are all big Coventry fans and they cannot believe their luck in terms of, well, not luck, I mean, it's just skill. They're absolutely storming the championship. Coventry have had a very troubled past and they seem to be very much on the up. So good on them.
Well, I've got to gleefully say that we did beat Coventry at home earlier on in the season.
I think the only team to beat them so far.
Enough about football. People don't want to listen to me talking about Wrexham. I've got an interesting conundrum I would like to talk to you about. I had a client come to me and said, really like your work. We'd like you to do a project, redesign our website. And the question that was asked was, how much is it going to cost me ongoing? You know, do you offer any maintenance contracts or, you know, do you work on retainer? And my answer in the past has always been, well, we don't do that. You know, we do a project, we'll, you know, if things need doing in the future, we'll charge you a day rate for doing that kind of stuff. But there's never any kind of formal commitment. And I think a lot of the reason for that is, A, I don't want to charge people for not doing anything. I don't build on WordPress, so it's not like there's plugins or other things that need to be security or whatever that needs to be worked on. I just jokingly always say to people, hey, it's a website, not a Ferrari. It doesn't need servicing. It doesn't need oiling. So I've never really had an answer to that. So this is interesting. And the reason I'm more interested in it now is that everything seems to be going to a subscription model. Software, access to watching Wrexham games. I ought to be thinking that I need to move away from the feast and famine of project work and balance things out by working with people on a kind of a contractual regular basis. I haven't done it before and I'm not exactly sure how people work. Is that something that you've done? Have you got any thoughts about that?
It's something we've done a bit, and my accountant would ask me most months, when are you going to get some retainers set up and get some predictable income for the next year, as opposed to, as you say, the feast and famine of projects. We've done a few of what you were describing, the maintenance contracts, where we have done a full design and build of a site, and it's been hosted somewhere. But they're very small and just enough to do critical updates, if that's not provided by the host themselves. So it's not exactly a money spinner. It's more a case of giving the client the opportunity to buy some peace of mind, really, because they're not really buying much time from us for that. We have had in the past a slightly longer, more conventional retainer, actually with a local council, which works out quite well. And that was being on hand to support their service design department with whatever they needed. This contract went over for a year, and occasionally there was a burst of activity supporting a particular project. Otherwise, it was more almost like a paid mentoring effort in a way, because it wasn't enough to do that much substantial work on it, but it was enough to be able to provide input and keep them good at what they were doing internally. So that worked out quite well. I'd like to do more retainers. Occasionally, we will sell the team in on something close to a genuinely agile basis. If we can get the right client, you are genuinely just buying time in a fairly predictable way, then you're working as agile works with the client to get your backlog of, okay, this is what we're going to be working on for this sprint. This is the priority for the sprint after, and so on. From that point of view, it does kind of work like a retainer. It looks like a project from a distance, but when you're in there, it's just, you've got time, you've got this team, we can be flexible with the team. You don't necessarily know what you're going to be doing from 1 month to the next, which is different from a project as such. That sort of retainer, that's the closest that we've done on a more regular basis. That works well for us because you've got people significantly dedicated to that client and piece of work. We've looked at retainer options in the past. We have friends of companies in Brighton, for example, who do retainers regularly, and they tend to be slightly heavier on the development side than we are. But you need a lot of them to make it work. Otherwise, you need staff available for a bit of their time, but make sure they're always available, because that's what the client's paying for with a retainer. But they're certainly not paying for someone full time. So what are you going to do with the rest of the time? And have you got enough for them to work for another client on another project? Or is it stretching people too thin? The balance can be difficult to work out, as much as it's nice to know that you've got a certain amount of money coming each month for a certain amount of time. So yeah, it's a tricky one. I think you have to be mostly all in on retainers for it to work.
Well, there's a few things that come to mind that I'm wrestling with. One is what I would do on a regular basis and how that would be managed. And do you dedicate 1 or 2 days a week to working with that particular client? The other is how you charge for that. Do you charge the same day rate when you're on a retainer and you've got a monthly contract? Or do you charge a lower rate? If I was a business person, I would say, well, okay, so there's 5 days a week. And if we've got, you know, one person working with one client for 1 day a week, there, that person can do 5 customers.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do 10 customers a week, I would need another person. If I wanted to do 30 customers a week, I'd need, well, my maths has run out already, however many people it would be to do that. But I'm not really in that situation.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I would say to a customer, I will charge you, let's imagine my day rate is $700 a day. I might say on a retainer, if you're going to commit to a year, I might do it for $500 a day. But then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, why am I charging you £200 a day less than I could earn if I was working with somebody paying the regular rate? It's a tricky one.
Yeah, there's a potential couple of answers to that question. One is that you are effectively paying for, you know, in return for predictability of income, which may actually be something worth paying for with that sort of opportunity loss. And the other thing then, depending on how your retainer's set up, if it's a use it or lose it kind of retainer, you stack up all of that time that isn't used and then suddenly you do a project. So if it's use it or lose it, you may not be actually giving them all of that time because they don't need it at a certain point. Reasons to justify that lower day rate. When we've done it, we have gone in with a bit of a discount, nothing as significant as in your example, but because it's felt like that's been worth it for us for the predictability side of things, if nothing else.
You mentioned some of your colleagues in Brighton that do this model. You said that they're mainly on the development side.
Yeah, they do design and development, some of the companies I'm thinking of. A significant part of what they do, the dev and the hosting. I guess with their retainers, as well as the support and keeping things up to date, there's also ongoing tweaks and changes that they might be doing for the client. And that could apply to a design-based retainer as well. But I think because they have a lot of clients, they fall into those examples you were saying where you could have one person who is dedicated to five clients sort of thing. And they're going to be maybe doing one day a week for each different client. And that's how you have to make it work, perhaps.
I was thinking that it's a bit like my car needs a service before we go off to Germany again. So I'm going to get it done at the local garage. And, you know, they're going to charge me top rate for servicing my Scooby. If I had a fleet of cars that needed servicing on a regular basis, then I would have a contract with that garage for the predictability of me coming in and spending X amount every month by bringing in a certain number of cars. They may give me a discount for that volume. So I suppose it's kind of like that, why that might be necessary from a development point of view. But where is it relevant from a design point of view? And the only thing that I can think of is I've spent this week working on a few bits and pieces. When I haven't been working on the bits and pieces, I've been tinkering with my own website and looking at what I think works and what can be improved. I've actually got a couple of speaking gigs. This is a bit of news for me. I'm going to be speaking at Dibby up in Edinburgh.
I've never been, but I hear good things about Dibby.
Yeah, this will be the third time that I've spoken at Dibby. And then I'm also going to be speaking at a conference dedicated to AI in Berlin.
Oh.
I think next June. So I'm going to be speaking about Dibby. In Berlin, I'm going to be talking about using AI in the creative process.
Yeah.
Which I think could be interesting. But at Dibby, I'm actually talking about web design inspiration from 1980s wrestling posters.
Nice. Yeah.
So, you know, I had to fiddle with my website and update the speaking page and put a thing on there about, you know, the fact that sadly I'm not going to be able to speak in America anytime soon.
Yep.
Certainly not going to be giving over 5 years of my social media.
No, I don't think they'll be letting you in.
Not after of what I've said about the Republicans in the past. But anyway, so, you know, I've been fiddling with it and I've done lots and I've been doing this a lot more recently, tinkering, looking at things, experimenting with what creates more page views or traffic or whatever it might be. And I suppose from a design perspective, that's part of what I might do as a designer on retainer, which is to actually look, not just kind of bite off chunks of a project to do, but to actually think about this website or client's website as if it's my own and then just keep coming back, iterating on it and improving certain things and doing some testing or whatever. And that I can see is worth paying for from a client's point of view on a longer term basis.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Because as much as you were saying earlier on that it's a website, it doesn't need the oil changed on it all the time. A new website launch is not the end of the story, is it? It will very often be the starting point. And if it's supporting an ongoing business or organization with a whole bunch of regular users or customers, then there's always experimentation. Does the change work? Shall we iterate? Adding, testing new features, all of that stuff. If the organization can justify having an internal team that an internal team would do, if they can't, then that's something that can be outsourced to someone on a part-time basis to keep doing that and to keep making those improvements. Ultimately, there needs to be some kind of build because things need to go live. but it certainly needs design to support that, whether it's design or whether it's writing, whether it's, you know, all of the above.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing I'm thinking is, Paul Boag got me onto this kind of time bank concept, which is rather than just charging somebody a bank of time, where you say, right, you're going to buy, I don't know, 10 hours worth of my time. And we can use that up whenever we need. I've been thinking about that almost as a gateway towards a full retainer. Let's take this prospective client of mine as an example. He may not yet have the confidence, or we may not have built up the relationship to a point where he's prepared to say, yes, I'm going to sign up for a year of you working with me 2 days a week. But what I could say to him is, hey, we don't know whether you need 2 days a month, so, or 2 days a week. So what we could do is you could buy a block of 10 hours and then you can top that up as we go along, and we'll review in 2 or 3 months and find out whether you're spending too much or too little.
Yep.
Or I'm doing too much or too little. And then if it looks like you're going to get better value by actually putting me on a proper retainer for 2 days a week, then it's better for me in terms of longer term security and comfort of knowing that income's coming in. But you're going to know that we're actually using that time effectively, and you're going to get some real benefit from it and save some money along the way.
Yeah, that's how the retainer worked with Adrian Worthing Council that I was talking about earlier on. It effectively sold. We said on average, it'll be about a day and a half a week's worth of work for you. So that means you've bought this number of days up front, and we'll just do a burn down from there. We'll just keep tracking it and keep seeing what the average is. We haven't used up all of your time in 3 months when it's supposed to be lasting for a year. We'll reserve half a day for a regular catch up, and then maybe 2 months will go by, and then we'll use the 8 days or however many it was. So it just burned down from that time that was sort of banked, and we have a separate arrangement for how you get paid and how often. But yeah, that's how that worked for us, because it enabled us to give slightly more value to the council, because they could kind of save up some. Right, we can go for a week's burst at this and get something more substantial done for you.
So my worry with that, one of my worries with that, is I am the world's worst time manager and multitasker. So I would worry about losing track. How do you manage your burn down? Do you keep a post-it notes, or is it done in some kind of software?
Well, because, you know, we're an agency, we've got quite a few people whose time we need to track and bill out is through time tracking software. We use Harvest for that and Forecast for our planning, and those two bits of software join up together. So Harvest, we use fairly conventional timesheets. The difference is we don't make everybody account for every hour of the day. Lots of companies do that. Back when I was an engineer, we used to have to do that. And you'd have different codes. You'd have to say, well, I kind of wasn't actually doing client work at this point. There was some reading or something, so I have to put an hour of reading down or whatever. We don't do that. We just use it for tracking the time that needs to be billed to the client. Isn't always every hour of every day. You don't have to account for the rest, because it basically just gets made up and just really annoying to people, and it doesn't matter anywhere near as much as tracking how much of the client's budget we've used and how much we've got left on a project, tracking the hours that have been spent and given to the client.
I remember having to do timesheets in the past and kind of almost resenting it. I used to joke, you know, we used to have, she's going back years now, when it wasn't just me and Sue. And, you know, we'd have our kind of daily stand-up, you know, first thing in the morning. And it's like, what did you do yesterday? I thought about tabs. I used to resent having to account for every hour of every day. So the idea is that we finish this call and I start working on another project and I turn the clock on. That's probably not a bad way of doing it.
Yeah, it probably isn't. Me, I'd be working on one project at a time. I would know how much the client was going to pay me, and I would know the deadline. And it would basically be fixed cost, probably. Whereas at ClearLeft, we do a bit of a mixture between fixed costs. We're kind of officially time and materials. In reality, it gets closer to fixed costs. But when you're running a business like that, which is based on selling people's time, you still got to track that time to make sure you're not over-servicing and delivering time for free for a client when that should be spent for another client who's paying you. If you don't do that, the business starts to fall apart.
I've never started a project on a daily rate or anything like that. I've always said, I think this is going to take 4 weeks and this is how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll win and sometimes it will take longer and that's that. Unless the client completely changes their mind halfway through and says, I think it'd be great if we had a forum, or as somebody said to me this week, can we get some way of getting user-generated content into the design? Well, that wasn't spoken about before. So it was like, well, okay, that's a new thing. We can talk about that, but let's get the first thing finished first.
Yeah.
I've known clients that have come to me and said, you know, we worked with an agency and they did a load of work. They ate through our budget and we still didn't get what we wanted in the end. When we did ask for new stuff, they said, that's going to be another £100,000. Thank you very much. And so I've never worked on that basis, kind of almost out of principle. But I think that if I was running a business like you do, where there's people, wages, salaries, and other stuff to bill out, I would have to be a lot more organized.
Yeah, as I say, we have a bit of an amalgam. Clients do still, apart from this, where we are genuinely selling, here's an agile team where we know you've got a bunch of stuff that needs to be worked on. Have this team for the next 2 months working full-time and we'll together work out what they're going to do from sprint to sprint. That aside, most of the work is project work. So there's a budget and we work out how many days it will take. Our day rate is this. And that either comes to the budget or we work backwards from a client's budget and say, how long have we got to do this? Can we do it for that time? Of what they're asking for, do we need to put some boundaries around, you know, tighten up the scope to make sure that we've got a mutual understanding of what we can do for what they're paying for? It's all still presented on a day rate basis. And that has the advantage. There's a mutual advantage because we are still going to deliver what we say we deliver because that's written in a scoping document, in a statement of work. So the client can be confident that what we've agreed on at the beginning is what they're going to get. But it does also give us the flexibility to say, look, now we've done a discovery phase. This bit is going to take a lot longer than we both thought for these reasons. So let's talk about either a reallocation of that time or some more budget because we're going to need another 5 days to do that thing. Similarly, client can come along and say, now you've done the discovery phase for us. We can see that we need this thing that we haven't thought about, but we don't need that. And we don't need to necessarily go through a whole change request kind of bureaucracy that way. We can say, okay, that's fine by us. We'll just agree that in an email and that's what we'll spend those days on instead. And it can, the way I look at it is that you can get the best of both worlds really by having that flexibility because you're just charging by day, but you've got the upfront agreement of what they are going to get. And so you don't just burn through time. It's not like building a massive train line between London and Manchester and then, and then deciding you're going to stop at Birmingham. It doesn't work like that. We would get it to go all the way to Manchester.
Many years ago, I got a call from our mutual friend, Paul Annette, who said, you know, hey, I've got this government job. They needed a designer. Do you want to work on it? And I did for a year, which was very nice. Thank you very much. And never really said properly thank you to Paul. I think I owe him a lobster lunch. But we were working for one of the big consulting companies. And, you know, this project, I know that consulting company and all of the tech behind it. I think Red Hat were involved and IBM and probably a million others, just massively overrun in terms of budget.
Yeah.
I have never overrun in terms of budget, not ever. And I know that I'm not building something as complicated because that's not normally what I do. But I can't imagine a situation where either you or I would just turn around to a client and go, do you know what? That's not going to be £100,000 anymore. It's going to be £1 million.
Yeah.
Expect them to pay.
And I'm pretty sure because we stick to what we said, I think we miss out on winning work as well. You know, there's a breakdown of it's like 80% quality, 20% price. So it's like, we'll just like massively cut the prices, knowing that we're just going to add on a whole load once we start going and then get it back up to what we thought it would be in the first place. And we're kind of, I don't know, I just can't operate that way. It just doesn't sit right to me.
No, I think we could do made a decision many years ago that I wouldn't participate in that circus.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we never won anything anyway. Going back to my initial conundrum, I come to you as a business owner and I say, look, I've got this website, it's doing fine, but we know that it's not doing as well as we would want it to. We've got lots of ideas for how we can improve it. We think there's an initial project where we need to redesign what we've already got and improve on that. But, you know, we don't just want to do this as a project. We want to work with somebody long term on a continuous basis to really take us to where we want to go. What do you then, as Rich and Clear Left, say to me? What's your approach to that?
The approach, aside from that initial piece of work to redesign what they have already, is to make sure that part of that conversation is introducing some sensible and meaningful metrics and analytics so that then you have a basis for deciding where further attention needs to go. If further attention is not also coming from additional functionality or further changes that you have in mind or have planned. But to be able to say, okay, we'll get that site redesigned, we'll get it live, and then come back in 3 months, look at your analytics, see how it's been performing in real life. And then we can have a look to see how does that compare to where we wanted it to be doing and what we wanted it to be. Let's look at the ones that aren't performing well and work out, and then spend some time trying to work out why. And then put forward some changes and test those and then come back. So that can be part of how the retainer structures. It just become, right, this is now an ongoing series of improvements, and that can be additions and it can just be improvements of what's there based on continuous learning. So I think that's probably the most useful way in. You can do that both as a designer, and that works well if our clients have a capable internal development team responsible for some bespoke software and maybe their CMS themselves, but just don't have any design or very little design or UX capability. That's where we come in and look at the metrics, see where the changes need to go, work with their team. That team puts the changes we recommend live, and then we come back again and make more changes, improving that way.
And that really helps to justify the ongoing work, because you're not just saying, hey, I'm going to build you a bunch of assets, or I'm going to do this or that or the other. It's structured and forms part of the strategy, which I like, and I think the client will like that as well.
I definitely think that's the way to go. You don't know what you're going to be working on. You can say we'll spend however many days each month to look at something and make changes. So you've definitely got that time from us. If we decide it needs more time for that particular burst of activity, then you can buy some more. You sort of come in at that core level. What's the minimum that we think could be useful to do this? There will be continuing improvements on that basis, based on what we see.
That's given me some food for thought. I'm going to be meeting the guy again next week. So this weekend, I will sit and mull that over.
I need to snip that bit out and use that to sell some retainer work for us as well.
So speaking of selling things, I don't know whether you've caught a glimpse, anybody watching this on the video, but adorning my wrist, I should try and get this nearer the camera, is
very lovely.
My brand new IWC Big Pilot watch. The reason I bring this up is we had an absolutely brilliant experience. I used to work with a Swiss camera company based in Schaffhausen, and IWC is also based in Schaffhausen. We stopped there in the summer and went around the museum. And I said to the guy, I'm going to be turning 60 in November. I want to come back and buy a watch. That's what we did. I could have bought this watch here. I could have bought it on the internet. It would have come quicker and I wouldn't have had to drive to Switzerland to get it. But we had an absolutely brilliant experience going into the IWC boutique in Schaffhausen, and the guy brings out the watch on the tray. I know not everybody's in the, you know, privileged position of being able to buy a luxury timepiece, but if you ever are, that is such a great experience. And it just made me think, maybe this is an opportunity for a subject on another podcast, how we can bring that experience into how we deliver things to clients rather than sending an email saying, hey, your website's live.
The risk of humble bragging, I have my watch here. It's a Breitling.
Well, hello.
I bought that with an inheritance of my granddad a good few years ago. I wanted something that would last, that would permanently sort of remind me of her. I thought it was a nice thing to get with my inheritance. I went to Selfridges to buy it, and it was such a crap experience. I know which watch I want, but I still need you to sell it to me, not just stick it in a bag and say, that's £1,000, please, which is basically how it went. And it was a guy on a watch counter surrounded by much more expensive Breitlings and Rolexes and all the rest of it. Maybe I wasn't spending enough money to warrant his attention, but it's like, that's why I went to bloody Selfridges. I thought I could get some kind of experience from it, but it really wasn't. I was most disappointed, but I do still love the watch, even though I'm not wearing it right now. It's quite heavy.
I was going to say, that looks like an Apple Watch. Is that the Ultra that's on your wrist at the moment?
I can't remember. This is just an old one.
Oh, okay, that's the regular one. But it was interesting. And you know, he brings the thing out on a tray, and this is 11 o'clock in the morning, and he says, "Would you like a glass of champagne?" Well, it was a bit early, and I don't drink champagne anyway, so it's like, "Do you want an espresso?" He goes through the watch, and I bought an extra band for it. So he fits the band, and he sizes it. Then he spends about half an hour showing me how the watch works, which is essentially two things. You have to wind it periodically, and you have to set the time. And there's no chronograph, no date window. If it runs out, you have to change the date. So there's like two features on this watch. You can wind it or you can set the time.
Yeah.
Still took half an hour for him to show me and talk to me about how this crown on the watch was machined. He didn't have to sell it to me. I probably already paid for it at that point. But that whole experience of taking me through it was well worth the journey down.
You may have decided you want the thing, but when you're making a significant lifetime purchase, you want that experience, but you also want confirmation that you're not throwing your money away. It's a combination of the two.
I remember a conference talk that Brendan Dawes did many years ago, where he talked about a bookshop experience. And he went into an old-fashioned bookstore and he bought a book, and the guy had a great big roll of brown paper and string. So got his book and wrapped it in brown paper and tied it up with string. And Brendan took the book home. Brendan had to undo the string and unwrap the book. And how that was as much part of the experience as any other thing. It wasn't like opening an Amazon parcel. But I've always remembered that.
Oh, lovely.
That was just an excuse for me to brag about my new watch.
And it is a lovely watch.
It is a very nice watch.
Very classy.
I do love my watch. Very nice. You've given me a lot to think about today, actually. That was grand.
We should call time on the podcast.
Yeah, this weekend is a big one because Wrexham are playing Watford. So let's hope for a decent result against Watford.
I wish you luck.
Well, cheers, mate. And we will see you on the next one.